We all have times in our lives when we reach those moments where we don't know what to do. In Psalm 25, David was in a place where he didn't know what to do. He was having some problems with his adult children. One of his sons, Amnon, raped his half-sister, Tamar. And Absalom, his other son, took revenge on Amnon and had him killed. And then Absalom led a rebellion against David and took over the palace. And David ran with his servants outside the city. The king is living outside of the city while his son is in the palace taking over the kingdom. And in the midst of all of this, he writes Psalm 25, and he says, O Lord, O you, O Lord, I lift up my soul. O my God, I trust in you. Let me not be ashamed. Let not my enemies triumph over me. Indeed, let no one who waits on you be ashamed. Verse 3, I like the way that the NIV translates verse 3. He says, no one who hopes in you will ever be put to shame. When I say that we reach a point where we don't know what to do, I'm not talking about how am I going to make it through another day of work, or how am I going to make it through traffic day, or what am I going to wear. I'm talking about those times in your life that you literally don't know what to do, and you really don't want to pray about it, or you're afraid to pray about it because you can't imagine a solution that would come to the problem that you have. But verse 3 of Psalm 25, David says, I don't know what to do, but I do know that no one who hopes in you will ever be put to shame. Someone who says, you know, I don't know what to do, but I'm going to put all of my eggs in one basket. I'm giving it to God. God, if something goes wrong, it's on you, but I'm going to trust you to do this. And there's going to be hardships and hard times that may come during that period of time. But how does this work? No one who puts their hope in you will ever be put to shame. How does that work? Well, to kind of explain this principle, I want us to go to 2 Kings chapter 4 this morning. That will be our main text. 2 Kings chapter 4. And we see Elisha, the prophet, ministering to a widow. Verse 1, 2 Kings chapter 4. A certain woman of the wives of the sons of the prophets cried out to Elisha, saying, your servant, my husband, is dead, and you know that your servant feared the Lord, and the creditor is coming to take my two sons to be his slaves. This woman was married to one of the sons of the prophets. The term sons of the prophets referred to those people who they were training to be prophets. In modern day terms, you can say they were in seminary school. And what I want us to, the first point, and what we're going to do this morning, I want to show you four, we're going to have four realities to keep in mind, or four realities that we face when we don't know what to do. Four realities that we face when we don't know what to do. Number one, we all face times of desperate need. This widow was in a time of desperate need. Her husband had died, and she didn't know what she was going to do. And she comes to Elisha. She cries to Elisha because her son, her husband, was one of the sons of the prophets. He was training to be a prophet. And they probably had to make some sacrifices in regards to that. I don't know if they had to relocate to be closer to the school. But we know that she didn't have a lot of money because she was getting ready to sell her sons into slavery just to pay the bills. And she comes to Elisha and she says, you know that my husband, your servant, was faithful and feared the Lord. What's she implying? He said, Elisha, you know the sacrifices that we made. My husband was training to be a prophet, and in the process of training to be a prophet, he died. And we've made sacrifices. We've gone above and beyond the call of duty, and we thought that since we were doing a little bit extra or a little bit more than other people, that, well, we had some expectations that God would come through for us and that God would make sure that everything worked out just fine. And let me just tell you that my husband dying was not a part of our plan. She didn't know what to do. But how many times have we done that in our lives? How many times have we said, we'll do a little bit extra here or a little bit extra there, and we'll put forth a little extra effort, and God won't allow anything to happen to us while we're doing that type of ministry or that type of work? I want us to understand one principle here on this point, and that is that serving is not a hall pass on suffering. Serving is not a hall pass on suffering. Some people think that they're exempt from suffering because they say, well, I have a relationship with Jesus, and he walks with me and he talks with me and he tells me that I am his own. But then Hebrews 12:6 says, for whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son that he receives. God's love is not a pampering love, it's a perfecting love. And whenever God tries to chip off some of our character, it doesn't happen without a little friction from time to time. So back to our text and back to verse 1 of 2 Kings chapter 4. The woman cries out to Elisha, your servant, my husband is dead, and you know that your servant feared the Lord, and the creditor is coming to take my two sons to be his slaves. She's in a place financially, she's about to sell her kids just so she can pay the bills. She doesn't know what she's going to do, but if you have a good theology about God during hardships, you better believe that God is moving toward you and getting ready to do something great. Because he has promised, I will never leave you and I will never forsake you. And when we have to get this theology and look at our hardships to say, God has trusted me with a lot of responsibility. Maybe God has trusted you with a lot of responsibility. And you're really struggling to accept what David said, that no one who hopes in you will ever be put to shame. You can't see that right now, but you know it's going to happen eventually. And we have to look at our hardships as things that God has placed a lot of responsibility and entrusted us with that as a responsibility. So point number one, we all face times of desperate need. Second reality to face, God needs only what we have. Verse 2, so Elisha says to her, what shall I do for you? Tell me, what do you have in the house? She looks around the house and she says, well, you know, I don't have much. She says, your maidservant has nothing in the house but a jar of oil. So this oil could have been used for cooking, but it had some kind of monetary value to it. It was worth something of value. And in a minute, we're going to see the miracle is going to take place from what she already has. God needs only what you have and not what you don't have. I don't know where you are in your life from a spiritual standpoint. I don't know what struggles you're going through. You may be in a situation where you don't know what to do. But whatever situation you're in, just remember that God needs only what you have. God knows where you are, and he knows that he is going to use the resources that you already have to help you out. Throughout scriptures, we have seen time and time again that a person is always blessed by God when they put their faith into action. No one in scriptures has ever been blessed by God by just faith alone. In fact, James would say, even said, if you believe in God, that's good for you. Even the demons believe and they tremble. It doesn't do them any good. And so every time someone has exercised their faith, God has blessed them as a result. David took 5 stones and killed Goliath. Joshua and the children of Israel marched around Israel for 7 days, and the walls fell. And God needs only what we have to help us out. In Matthew chapter 14, there was a multitude of people that came to Jesus, and they were saying that they were hungry, and Jesus' disciples said, well, let's dismiss the crowd and find them something to eat. And Jesus says, well, you find something for them to eat. And they went through all the crowd. They went through the whole crowd, and all they came back with was 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. And you can imagine, we can't tell what the tone of voice was with the disciples, but you can imagine the disciples may have been frustrated and said, well, Jesus, all we found was 5 loaves and 2 fish. And Jesus says, perfect. We'll sit them down and we'll feed them. Now, Jesus could have easily called manna down from heaven and performed a great miracle there, but he used that as an opportunity to allow them to show their faith that God would use what they had in exercising their faith and providing for their need. If you want God to work in your life, you're going to have to do something. It's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen just by faith alone. God's going to do his part. We have to do our part and step forward in faith, knowing that he's going to be there. So reality number one, we all face times of desperate need. Number two, God needs only what we have. And thirdly, God does what we cannot do. This widow had to do something. Verses 3 and 4 of our text, he said, then he said, go borrow vessels from everywhere, from all your neighbors, empty vessels. Do not gather just a few. And when you come in, you shall shut the door behind you and your sons and pour it into all the vessels and set aside the full ones. So she is to go to her neighbors and to borrow a bunch of empty vessels and bring them back. And Elisha says, do not gather just a few. So can you imagine the conversations that this lady must have had with her neighbors? And knocks on the door, I need to borrow some empty jars. Oh, sure, how many do you need? However many you have, it doesn't matter. When am I going to get that back? I don't know. I really don't know when you're going to get them back. I don't even know what I'm going to do with them. I just know that I need them. And so it could have been some awkward conversations between her and her neighbors, but she goes and she gathers as many vessels as she can, empty vessels, empty jars, whatever you want to call it, and she brings it back to the house. And then in verse 5 and 6, here's where God steps in and he uses something that she already has, and he does something that she cannot do. Verses 5 and 6. So she went up, she went from him and shut the door behind her and her sons, who brought the vessels to her, and she poured it out. Now as it came to pass when the vessels were full, then she said to her son, bring me another vessel. And he said to her, there's not another vessel. So the oil ceased. Imagine this woman's reaction as she has this very small jar of oil. She has all these empty jars. And every time she pours, she fills one jar full of this tiny jar. It just keeps flowing out. It keeps coming and keeps coming. And then she says, hand me another empty vessel. And then she fills them all full with oil, and then when the final vessel is filled, it says the oil ceased. God was taking what she already had and supernaturally making it go further. Maybe the way that God is working through you is allowing you to persevere another day. Maybe God is taking the strength that you already have and making it go longer than you thought it would go. Maybe God knows that there are others that are depending on you, and that your strength that is an encouragement to them. And it may be something, somebody that you don't even know is watching you. But God knows that your strength to them is important. And maybe your perseverance and your longevity is the way that God is blessing you. Nothing comes without work. Several years ago, some of you may remember the One Nation Under God campaign. There is a Church of Christ, I believe it was in Tennessee, somewhere in the South. And they had a mission to put a One Nation Under God brochure in every single mailbox in America. And some people said, oh, that's too big of a task, we can't do it. But they followed through with it. They followed through with the plan. They figured out exactly how to do it. They raised enough money, and every single mailbox in the United States several years ago, I can't remember what year it was, but every single mailbox in the United States received one of those One Nation Under God flyers. But it took a lot of work and a lot of dedication. If you want to see God bless you in something, you're going to have to do, you put something into it. 1 Corinthians 3, verse 6. Paul says, I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. God gave the increase, but it was after Paul and Apollos had spent countless hours planting and watering the seed of the kingdom. Now, for the rest of the story, the widow, she had all these empty vessels, filled them up with oil. She took all those vessels of oil and was able to sell all those vessels of oil and paid her bills, and it kept her sons from being sold into slavery as a result. So we all face times of desperate need. God needs only what we have. God does what we cannot do. And the fourth and final reality is that God fills only what we offer. How many of you believe that if she had collected one more jar, that God would have filled it? What if she had collected 10 more jars? 50 more jars? Okay. Regardless of how many more jars she had, would have collected, God would have filled those as well. Alexander McLaren, who is a commentator from previous generations, he said, God keeps giving himself as long as we keep bringing that into which God can pour himself. As long as I keep giving, God keeps pouring. Sometimes we have prayed for something specific and we didn't see it happen, so we just stopped praying about it because it was too painful to bring it up. And we told ourselves, it's not going to happen anyway. Some people may say, well, my marriage is always going to be like this. My kids are never going to listen to me. My brother or sister, they're never going to be saved. And I just can't keep bringing it up. It's too painful. I'm going to stop praying about it. And we just give up. But we have to remember what David said, that no one who hopes in you will ever be put to shame. So we have to keep pushing forward. I like the acronym PUSH when it comes to prayer. Pray until something happens. You got to keep pushing forward. And we couldn't quit praying about it because it hurts too much to bring something up. But I'd like to challenge you today to be like this widow in this story, and to bring what you have to God and allow him to use only what you have. But you need to trust God to help you fill whatever need that may be. What is the greatest need in your life right now? What is that greatest thing that you want to see God do, and it hurts most to wait for Him to do it? And let me ask you honestly, have you closed your hearts to that? Have you stopped trusting God in that area of your life that is your greatest need? And would you start again? Would you keep pushing forward and keep praying and pray until something happens? Because we all face times of desperate need. God only needs what we have. God does what we cannot do, and God fills only what we offer. God was able to help this widow out in 2 Kings chapter 4 to fill those vats of oil, to fill those empty vessels full of oil. And she turned around and sold them and was able to pay her bills. And she was in a position to what she didn't know what to do. And the only way that she could ask for help was through Elisha. And God blessed Elisha's work and helped the widow out in the end. So when we face times where we don't know what to do, we need to remember that no one who puts their hope and their trust in the Lord will ever be put to shame. Maybe there's someone who needs to respond to the Lord's invitation this morning. If that is your need, won't you come now while we stand and while we sing?